The ping pong thing is, like you said, is ridiculous. Let's be honest, like, guys can't do this, but we can do this and battle over each other. You know, it's that part just don't make no sense to me. And I got through 10 lines of the handbook and just put it down because it becomes so frustrating.
The man just wants to play doubles ping pong, people, okay? DeMar DeRozan there talking about the protocols in Orlando. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Today, I am joined from the Cobra Dome by New York Times bestseller Brian Windhorst and the 2008 NBA champ, Mr. Kendrick Perkins. Coming up, guys, Giannis Antetokounmpo has a major decision to make on re-signing with the Bucks this upcoming offseason. How far will the Bucks have to go in the playoffs to make it an easy decision for him? We will discuss that. But first, we begin with Maya Moore, the WNBA star who put her career on hold in 2019 to help Jonathan Irons, an innocent man who was freed yesterday after being convicted on burglary and assault charges back in 1998. This was them this morning.
In that moment, I really felt like I could rest. I mean, I've been standing, and we've been standing for so long, and it was an unplanned moment where I just felt relief and just, it was a kind of a worshipful moment, just dropping to my knees and just being so thankful that we made it. And, you know, when I stepped away two springs ago, I just really wanted to shift my priorities to be able to be more available and present to show up for things that I felt were mattering more than being a professional athlete.
That was on Good Morning America this morning. Now, for those who don't know, this is Maya Moore's resume. This is what she walked away from when she decided to put her career on hold to help get the wrongful conviction of Irons overturned. Moore is a four-time champion. She was in the prime of her career. Perk, what is your reaction to this news?
Rachel, this is beautiful. I mean, this is everything. And I said this before to you. You know, men, we do a lot of barking and we try to act like we tough, but women really are that backbone. Women want the smoke.
Speak.
And what she did was she led by example, and she did a wonderful job at it. And listen, I applaud Amaya Moore because she walked away from her livelihood, Rachel, her job. The things that, you know, her job that provided her to put food on the table and clothes on her back to go and address an issue far as in social justice and things to that nature and stand for what's right. And it's a beautiful thing. And what she did was she set the bar. She set the bar for everybody, including myself, because she made me go look in the mirror and say, hey, you know what, Perk? Are you doing enough? Are you doing enough out here in the community and standing for what's right? So what Maya Moore has done and what she's doing, it speaks beyond volumes, and I love it. And she needs to be a roses, daisies, tulips, every flower imaginable, because I'm so proud of her right now.
She's a definition of a role model. She's a definition of an example, as Perk said, because not only does she perform at the highest levels in her sport, but obviously she created something that was important to her. She chased it. It was a difficult process. She was there putting on the time and effort as nobody was paying attention, which is at the highest level that you could ever ask for someone to be, to want to emulate. And I almost feel like there should be an award created to be named after her, because that way it would encourage others in her situation and even below to follow in her footsteps.
Yeah, absolutely. That is a great idea. And guys, we talk about some of the natural gifts that athletes are born with, right? Like whether it's height or intelligence or leadership or jumping ability, things that make them who they are. We have learned so much about Maya Moore, about other gifts that she has. She has exceptional compassion. She has Hall of Fame sacrifice, right, and humility. And I've heard people say, why did she have to do this, right? Couldn't she be playing basketball and let someone else do it? But the fact is, we are talking about Jonathan Irons today because Maya Moore was involved in his case, because of the platform she has in basketball. And we owe it to her and the work she did to recognize that there are so many other Jonathan Irons out there. There are people who were railroaded by a system that was biased against them. And all of us Americans who want a justice system where the innocent are protected and the guilty are punished should thank her because this is what we want. This is fairness. And I really hope that this inspires more people.
Ooh.
All right, guys,
hey,
I want to talk.
Hey, Rachel, listen, I love when you take me to church. You just took me to church. You speaking that gospel. Wait, I mean, you starting to show off right. That's the way to do it.
This is America. This is fairness. This is justice for all. And I am so impressed every day by this woman. All right, the NBA and the Players Association released the following statement this morning on coronavirus testing. In tests conducted of 344 NBA players between June 24th and June 29th, an additional 9 players have tested positive for coronavirus. Now, in tests conducted of the staff, there was 884 staff, and 10 have tested positive for coronavirus. So, Brian, that is 9 additional positive player tests from the previous round of results. With about 7% of players testing positive currently, is that a discouraging number or more around the number that you expected? Or both?
Well, Rachel, the way the league looks at this is they want to identify who is the virus so that they can get them treated and get it out of the bubble before it gets in. So every positive test, I know that that can be worrisome to some people, but the league looks at it as, all right, we caught another one. And by the way, it's more than 25. Because there were people that tested positive before those tests started. And we're never going to know the real number because there's a privacy issue. But this release to me wasn't so much about the players. I was extremely relieved to see that only 10 of those over 800 people tested of the staff and the coaches came back positive. That is the higher risk group. That is the the older risk group. That is the risk group that, quite frankly, has to follow the rules more tightly. And is to see that number so low was a huge relief to me. I think that's good news. I'm not so worried about the players. They have been able to fight this off. I'm worried about those older folks.
I agree. Listen, in a perfect world, we would wish that none of them would have caught the coronavirus. But the NBA and Adam Silver put together a pretty good plan. They knew that people were going to test positive. We knew this. Like, out of all these people that are involved with the NBA that's going down to the bubble, players, the people that work in the organizations, we knew some people would go test positive. But that's why the NBA took the steps of saying, you know what, teams got to report back on this date. Teams got to test on this date prior to going down to the bubble. Also, we're going to give you 3 weeks of training camp just in case some guys have to quarantine for 14 days. They still have enough time before the regular season start. So I think the NBA are doing a great job, the best that they could do, because it's no real solution and it's really no perfect thing, no perfect way to address this situation. They knew this was going to happen. They had a plan in place. And I think, you know, the percentages are low, in my opinion. And I think, you know, we got to continue to move forward.
I hope this is impactful to the other guys' teammates, right, to see that, oh, this guy tested positive. Maybe we didn't have any symptoms. Now he's got to sit out for 2 weeks. Maybe spur some of the guys to take all of this more seriously because they are going to leave for a week and get on that team plane together. And catching this within this next week is when it is particularly dangerous, not just for their team, but for the bubble concept in general. All right, guys, I want to talk about Zion Williamson. He is 4 days shy of his 20th birthday. When asked about that, here is what the youngest player in the league had to say.
I'm going to be 20. I'm no longer going to be a teen, but it's, in a weird way, I haven't felt like a teenager in a long time, so I feel like it's not going to be anything different.
Perk, what do you make of Zion and his comments?
Listen, I don't even want to hear what Zion say. I saw pictures today. I've seen pictures floating around, and he's not a teenager. He is a man. When we talk about Zion Williamson, he's very mature. He's been very mature since high school. I love the way that he handled himself, the way that he handles pressure. And for him to go out and for them to post pictures, and I'm watching veins pop out through his neck and veins popping through his arms, that tells me, one, he's been working his behind off. Two, his body percent is low. Three, this is not the same Zion Williamson that we seen the first day of Summer League. This guy is taking his profession very seriously, and the NBA is in great hands, and Zion Williamson is the future face of the NBA. I'm saying it right here.
Yeah, he said he had worked out on the court almost every single day of the quarantine, and it shows. He looks like he's in really good shape. And I'm going to say something about this. normally in the situation, Ja Morant would have had this Rookie of the Year closed up. And if everything had been voted on, normally it would have. But in this unique little moment, if Zion is dominant and gets into the eighth seed, we could reopen it. Mm-mm. So let's just see how that little storyline develops in Orlando.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Ja Morant, Brian, earlier today. He spoke about his physical transformation during the league's hiatus. Zion's not the only one. Ja talked about how he gained 12 pounds of muscle in that time. Take a listen.
Just been working out a lot, you know, just staying in the gym, the weight room, just pushing myself. Gaining strength has always been a top priority for me. Can absorb contact, be able to use my body more, get through different screens.
All right, so Brian, does this make you more confident in the Grizzlies locking up a playoff spot?
Yeah, one of the things you always see from young guards is they always have to bulk up because they're always physically stunned. Even no matter what they think, they're always stunned when they get to the league and see how physical it is. So we almost always see these guys add weight into their second and third year. Look at Zion's teammate, Lonzo Ball, what he's done to his body. So really, this is kind of like his second season. He got an offseason to do that conditioning. He did the conditioning, and so he's going to defend that Rookie of the Year trophy that I think he pretty much had cinched up and now has to kind of win it again to lock it down.
I tell you what, the Memphis Grizzlies, the city of Memphis, they should be proud and jumping for joy because they have a young stud and a great leader in Ja Morant. For him to take advantage during this pandemic and go out and put on 12 pounds of muscle, that speaks volumes because guess what? That shows me that his leadership skills are there. That shows me that he's dedicated. That shows me that he's willing to sacrifice. And it also shows me that he's a winner. And this is why the Memphis Grizzlies are currently sitting in the eighth spot in the West. It's because of him, not because of his what he do on the court. It's his leadership skills. He take action. He don't talk about it. He do it.
Yeah, and by the way, I agree with you in general about young guards, Brian, but I got to say one of the notable things to me about Ja Morant is that he walked into the NBA stunned by nobody and scared of nobody, and apparently that is continuing now as well. All right, coming up, Vince Carter played 22 seasons in the league. We will show you how much video games evolved in that time. This is my favorite thing in the show today and some of his best moves next. First, though, with the season 28 days away, our countdown of the season's top plays continues. This is number 28. Take a look.
Now it's LeBron looking for his first assist.
And you just have to run because LeBron will see you. Even though you don't think he sees you, you're behind him. He knows where everybody is on the floor. He comes down, he says, I know you're behind me. Between the leg. Look at that high fly act by Dwight Howard as he crushes one.
The basketball tournament is back this year with a fully quarantined 24-team single elimination bracket played over 10 days in Columbus, Ohio. With $1 million winner-take-all first prize, the games begin Saturday at 3 o'clock Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. Welcome back to The Jump. So this has been going around online. On the left side of your screen at home, there's a photo of Vince Carter. This is what he looked like in basketball video games back in 1998 when he entered the league. On your right side, this is what he looks like in video games today. That inspired us to cook up some of Vince's best moves. Take a look.
Williams also going 2 for 2 at the stripe, cutting the Nets lead down to 9. 35 seconds left in the first. Carter acrobatic for 2 more. What a first quarter for Vince Carter.
Well, he took 3 Heat players to the rim that time and shot it over the best shot blocker in the NBA in Alonzo Mourning.
Now Vince Carter already with 15 points in the first quarter. Going down. Let Carter do his thing. Crossover. Carter. Spin.
You step up to the challenge.
Vince again. Dickerson on top of him. One hand to get on him. Through the legs. Through the legs. He kicks it to that.
zone, Rodney, there's not much you can do about it. Watch the move he uses right here. He'll back up Dickerson, gets him, puts the ball right back.
Childs gets a rebound, can't get it to go, too strong. Vince Carter gets it again. Skies uses the glass, and it's good. That's the move. That's the style of play thing to get the Raptors back with the reaction and the steal.
Combine a defensive effort with offensive flow. We got to get it done on both ends of the court.
Carter goes to score, poses, and graduates with honors.
Little crossover dribble, pulls up, squares up, nice release on the ball, get the backspin, knocks it down for two.
Board comes down legally, it goes off to Carter, Vince Carter down the middle, change direction, oh, slam dunk, one of the greats of the year.
Well, I knew he was going to posterize somebody, and John Summerstand is in the books.
Oh, was that beautiful? Change of direction, Summerstand is still on the floor.
All right, Perk, 22 years, that's a lot of posters. Did Vince ever dunk on you?
Mm. Hey, Rachel, listen, I was born, but I wasn't born yesterday. One thing, when I seen the best in-game dunker ever coming down the lane, I moved out the way and stayed on my man. There wasn't no help side help when it comes down to Vince Carter. So, no, I never got on the Vince Carter poster, and I could say that.
Absolutely.
Maybe Blake Griffin, not Vince.
Pull the loot on and move. Get out the way. All right, I want to move on to Rick Carlisle, who is the president of the National Basketball Coaches Association. Carlisle said yesterday, "We've been assured by the league that no one will be red flagged from going to Orlando based on age alone." Now, Carlisle, age 60, is one of the five oldest coaches that are scheduled to go to Orlando. So, Brian, that language was very interesting to me. Age alone?
Mm-hmm.
Are you confident all the head coaches who want to get down to Orlando are going to be able to, or do you anticipate anyone getting flagged?
The last time I checked with the league on this, they didn't say everybody was going. They said it's an ongoing medical process. So that sounds to me like there's possibility that somebody may get flagged. And I think it's good that they say no age. The age is not the only issue, because if they hadn't, it's a potential legal problem and there could be a lawsuit involved. But let me just remind everyone of the layers here. First, your team doctor has to give you the thumbs up and say it's okay. Then you have to have your records reviewed by a three-doctor panel selected by the league and the union, the coaches' union, the players' union. So you have to go through multiple rounds. And that's why this all takes time. But that also means that there's a possibility that could be something else in your background, in your history, that the public doesn't know about that could be flagged. So we'll see. Everyone gets on planes starting a week from right now.
Listen, let the coaches go. Let Rick Carlisle, let Greg Popovich, let the coaches go. Listen, the players are going to a billion-dollar bubble. They're probably going to be safer than being in their own home. So, therefore, the coaches, who we might consider as senior citizens, they're going down to a billion-dollar nursing home. They'll be just fine.
Perk.
Let them go. Let them go down there and coach their team. Let them go. Rachel, come on. Brian, let them go. Let them pass the test. Don't red flag them. Let them go. If they want to go, let them rock out.
I'm not sure I would say billion-dollar nursing home. I do agree with you that once they get everybody quarantined on this campus and are testing people daily and are using very stringent safety precautions, this will be safer than a lot of the environments that a lot of the people participating would have been in at home.
Yes.
None of the people on the campus are going to be going to even just a grocery store where other people will have been around and been in other things. So there is definitely a reason here that people feel safer going to go play in this basketball bubble. I do understand why the NBA is concerned, but that age alone is so important because it tells people they will be not discriminated against just on the basis of age. And as you say, Brian, we have laws in this country against that. All right, coming up, Amin Alhassan is going to join us to discuss the importance of Ben Simmons to the Sixers, who Brett Brown says is fully healthy now. Stick around for that. First up, though, our distant replay from this date in 2008. Sorry, Seattle fans.
Sonics owner Clay Bennett and the city of Seattle settled their lawsuit today. Bennett will be allowed to move to Oklahoma City for the upcoming NBA season. The team is leaving town, Bennett says, beginning tomorrow. He's not wasting a single moment. Now, the Supersonics name, logo, and colors, they'll stay behind.
The transition and the move of this operation, this team, begins tomorrow morning from Seattle to Oklahoma City. And it begins with the most important piece of our organization. It begins with our players.
He's good to go. He's put in a tremendous amount of work for me to be able to confidently say that. I think when you search for silver linings with this pandemic and the way things have shaped up, it would be hard pressed for me to find something more obvious than this. It's enabled Ben to reclaim his health. But I think inching along from maybe a month ago that we spoke, that is not true. He's good to go, and we look forward to watching him with what I'm told is, you know, effectively 100% health.
There we go. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. Brian Windhorst and Kendrick Perkins are still here. Plus, we've joined by our front office insider, Amin El-Hassan, to talk about what we just heard from Coach Brett Brown. He says that after dealing with back issues all spring, Ben Simmons is good to go, completely healthy. Amin, what are the most important ways Ben's return is going to impact the Sixers on the court?
Well, it goes without saying he's one of the best playmakers we have in the league, and obviously for Philly, he is the primary ball handler and play creator. His versatility with his size at 6'10", he can play different positions that allows them to play offensive talents around him, like, for instance, Tobias Harris, or all the way down to Shake Milton. You got different types of players that can fit alongside him. And the big thing is, when you think about the most ideal version of the Philadelphia 76ers, it's a team that can beat you in the open court and a team that can beat you in the half court. The half court part is obviously Embiid land, but when we're talking about the open court, there's few that are more electrifying than Ben Simmons. And obviously, defensively, he's so versatile. We don't talk enough about his defense, honestly. He's one of the best defenders we have in this league. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a 6'10 guy who can switch and guard a big on one possession, then come back and guard your point guard on the next, there ain't too many guys who can do that.
Well, I'm with you, Amin. And listen, getting Ben Simmons back healthy is huge for the 76ers. Would that make them a championship team? No, in my opinion. But when you talk about Ben Simmons as a player, his impact on the court is crazy to me, because so many people want to knock him for not being able to shoot, but he brings so much more to the table. Like Amin said, he's the primary ball handler, his decision making. And when you talk about his defense, it's so underrated to the point that in my eyes, he should be in the talks of defensive player of the year conversation, but he's not gonna win it, but he still should be in the conversation. When I look at Ben Simmons, no one ever questioned his competitive nature. He plays hard every single play, and he brings it. He plays with a great passion, and I think it's huge for him to be 100% healthy and for the Philadelphia 76ers to pick him back up.
Rachel, I've got one word for you. Pilates. That's what Ben Simmons said
he's
been doing every single day since in the shutdown, is Pilates. Now, he's added weight, and he says he feels great. Does Pilates help with the jumper? That's what I want to know. And we're about to find out, because at the end of the day, while Amin and Perk have just lauded him, and I agree with everything that they said, in a playoff setting, in a series, teams are not going to guard him. And it's the same situation with Giannis. Teams are not going to guard him in the half court. So Ben Simmons has to break that. If he can break that defense, he takes away the biggest weapon against him, and the 76ers will fly. We're going to find out.
I'm interested, of course, how Ryan Brokoff gets integrated into the Sixers. They just acquired him. He has been shooting at a 40% clip from behind the three-point line, and that's the kind of player that seems like a small pickup, but what he can do to exponentially activate other players who have greater gifts, if he gives the Sixers more spacing and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid have more room to operate around each other because of this pickup, that is going to be significant also. I want to show some of the latest footage we have of the practice courts being built out in Orlando. I've been told these are the team's actual courts from home that were trucked down to Florida. Of course, guys, courts don't need to follow safety protocols once they get on the campus, but the players do. And we had Damian Lillard talking. He says he is not confident that players will follow all of the protocols. This is interesting. Take a listen.
You telling me you're going to have, 22 teams full of players follow all the rules? Like, when we have 100% freedom, everybody don't follow all the rules. So, I mean, I don't have much confidence, but hopefully, you know, it'll be handled to a point where, like, we're not putting everybody at risk or in a dangerous position.
Perk, that's strong words from Dame. Do you agree?
No, I don't agree. And listen, I love Dame Dolla, but I don't agree with him on this one. When you're on a championship contender, you're competing for a title, it's sacrificing, it's discipline, and your leadership skills come into play. When you have guys like leaders like LeBron James, Rajon Rondo, Kawhi Leonard, Doc Rivers, Paul George, it's your job to hold everyone else accountable. It's your job while you're in film session to constantly preach, hey, guys, make sure you do the right things. And it's those guys' job to do the right things. And I think when you're fighting for a championship, they're going to sacrifice. They're going to be disciplined enough because they know what's at stake. They know what's at hand. And they know that if they don't abide by these rules and guidelines, that what's going to happen is they're going to jeopardize their chances of winning the championship. And I know that these guys are not going down to the bubble just to, you know, BS around or play around. They're going to be focused. They're going to be locked in. So I have to disagree with them, especially the guys, the teams that have it on their mind to win a championship.
Yeah, Perk, the problem is most of those teams aren't going to be championship contenders. They're going to be some regular teams that are out there basically to fulfill some TV contract stuff so everybody gets paid. And so even when you talk about those teams, then you're not talking about the main guys. You're talking about guys who don't play that much anyway. They're thinking about it as maybe, hey, I'm not that important to this situation. The reality is, it's not just the bubble. Look throughout our country. I went to Costco the other day, saw a family of four shopping, two teenagers, both of them were heads in their phones. Why do they need to be out? I don't know. But all I know is not everybody follows the rules. Damian Lillard is right. And so we can sit here and say, you know what at stake. But the reality is, not everybody pretends like everything's at stake. Some people take advantage of openings that they find to behave the way they want to behave. And like Damian Lillard, I'm worried too.
What are the rules? I don't know what the rules are because the rules seem to be changing every day. The protocol came out
Brian,
2 weeks
ago. Brian, you know basically what the
still
rules
changes
are that
happening
they're talking
to the protocol.
About. Right? Come on.
I know what the rules are, but I'm going to tell you something. I know that players are not supposed to do any exercise for 2 weeks if they test positive for COVID. Yet we've got coaches coming out and saying, about players, yeah, he's coming back, he's working out, he's doing yoga. And I'm like, wait a minute, he tested positive last week. He's not supposed to do anything for 14 days. So if you can't follow the COVID rules, if the teams aren't following the COVID rules, which is what this is all about, how are we going to expect all of the players to follow the example? I'm with Dame. I'd like to think in a perfect world that wouldn't happen, but we don't live in a perfect world.
Well, we heard at the top of the show, DeMar DeRozan upset about the ping pong rules, so... There you go. Another noteworthy item from Damian Lillard. He said he expects Jusuf Nurkić and Zach Collins to start for the Blazers once play resumes. Those guys have played a combined total of 3 games this season. So, I mean, do you think those guys will be able to round back into form enough to actually impact the Blazers' chances in those 8 seeding games? And if they do, what does the lineup shuffle mean for Melo, Hassan Whiteside? Give me the whole picture.
Well, Rachel, first of all, let's set aside that the Blazers have one of the hardest schedules. I feel so sorry for them. It's not fair. But put that aside. Absolutely, these two guys are going to help. Because Zach Collins, you said 3 games. That was the 3 games that Zach Collins played. Nurkić, of course, hasn't played at all since last year.
Yep.
And when he did play last year, they were winning at above a 70% clip. So you're talking about two players who are very pivotal, not only to their defense, but also their offense. Gives them sides, it gives them some flexibility. I think Carmelo Anthony is in a great situation because having better defenders on the floor makes it easier for him to focus on scoring and the things that he does well. I think the main thing here to remember is that schedule is a mother. I mean, you start with Memphis in that first game, you're like, okay, that's good momentum. And then the next 6 games are just a murderer's row. I fear that it may not be enough to have those guys to help them ultimately be successful.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Anytime you have Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, you got a great chance. But adding Zach Collins, who's one of my favorite players, and adding Nurkić, I think helps them a lot. But does it put them in position to get that number 8 seed or get that 9 seed? No. I think the key piece that they're missing is Trevor Ariza. With them losing Trevor Ariza, and all due respect to Trevor because he had family issues, I think that's what's going to hurt them the most because they needed that guy that was that has that championship experience, that wing defender, that lockdown defender, and they're missing that. And these bigs haven't played in almost a year. It's hard. It's different for guards, but for bigs, it takes them a while to get back going.
One thing to remember, they don't have to catch anybody at 8. They just have to get within 4 games. And then you're talking about one of the hottest players potential, Damian Lillard, in a 1 or 2 game setting. Get within 4 and let's see what goes. That should be their goal.
Yeah, absolutely. But they're competing with lots of teams. It's not like in the East where they're kind of only really competing with themselves. We'll have to see whether they can get it done. Amin, thank you for stopping by. We will return you to Costco and all of your shopping. We will see you very soon on this show. Coming up, the Milwaukee Bucks had the league's best record prior to the shutdown. Does their depth give them a leg up? And what factors should Giannis consider this offseason when it is time to decide on signing an extension? Yep, previously on. That's up next. Coming up next, 20 minutes of Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. SportsCenter is at 5 with the PTI guys joining the show at 5:30 and cap the day with SVP at 11 Eastern right after Top Rank Boxing. All right, guys, on Monday, we debuted a new series here at The Jump. We're taking a bunch of teams that are competing in Orlando and catching you up with where they are since it's been so very long since you've seen them on an actual basketball court. This is basically like when your favorite TV show comes back from hiatus. We've covered the Sixers, we've covered the Rockets, and today we're going to continue with the Milwaukee Bucks.
When Giannis is able to add that jumper consistently, he will be unguardable.
It's up to 3. Got it. Another one.
That 3 is wet tonight.
He's looking like he's Ray Allen.
I think he's at his peak. I think he's reached his peak.
No, I think we're the best team in the NBA.
Look at all those numbers. That's the profile of a team that should scare the heck out of you.
I'm between Kemba and Trae Young.
Wait, you don't want the dribbler?
I want somebody that's going to pass the ball. That's what I want.
The beef between Drake and Giannis reached new heights.
That's good. He cares about me. I really don't.
Giannis don't BS.
Yeah. Think about the Death Star. It's big, it blows up planets, but there's one little 1 meter by 1 meter shaft, and if you throw something down there, it all blows up. That's what the Bucks are like.
You have to have 2 megastars. That's when people fear you.
Watch Eric Bledsoe here. He's supposedly inbounding.
My kids heard me cuss last night because of this. I was like, what the?
Can you imagine this team with also Malcolm? Definitely wish he was still here.
They are missing Brogdon, and I thought they just let him walk away.
The Milwaukee Bucks have done everything right. They've created an incredible environment.
When you hit that level that Giannis is about to hit, he gets to decide, and you have to audition for him.
This year, MVP. This season, I think, is LeBron.
I think Giannis is clearly MVP.
This is going to be the toughest, like, championship you could ever win. Whoever wants it more is going to be able to go out there and take it.
Oh, man, I'm revved up just watching that. ESPN just updated its BPI title odds, and the Bucks are the overwhelming favorites at 83%, followed by the Lakers at 13%, then the Clips. So that BPI, that is a much higher percentage than what Caesars Vegas odds have. In Vegas, the Lakers are the favorites, although those odds often reflect who they think people will bet on. And guys, no matter where you put the odds, this is clearly the Bucks' best shot at a title in nearly 50 years. They have not only had the best record in the league, they lead the NBA in point differential from both their starters and their bench, even ahead of the Clippers' bench. So, Perk, I want to talk about that depth. This bubble scenario has the potential to really test teams. There's a higher chance of soft tissue injuries due to the long layoff, like pulling hamstrings, all that stuff. And then, of course, any player that contracts COVID is going to be quarantined for at least 14 days. Are the Bucks the team that's best positioned to handle a potential setback like that?
Well, no, Rachel. Although they are deep, every team needs their players, right? You're deep for a reason. Mm-hmm. Each guy matters. I remember playing in 2010 with the Boston Celtics when I tore my ACL. We still had Rasheed Wallace. We still had Kevin Garnett, but we could not pull through. And then you take a further look at the Bucks. Just think last year, right? Eric Bledsoe wasn't playing well. What happened? George Hill had to step in. So everyone is going to help them win the game. You know, stars are going to be stars, but each role player helps a championship team win a series or win a game. So, you know, it could, if any one of those guys that are in the rotation happen to get injured or contract the coronavirus, it could hurt them just like anyone else.
Rachel, you bring up a good point. They do have depth, which is a really good thing to have on this circumstance, but who's going? Is it Giannis? If Giannis goes out,
right,
the rest of their depth is sort of irrelevant. But I will say this. What they have is depth of style of play. And what I mean by that is they are a top five offensive team and a top five defensive team. Heck, they've been a top three in both categories for much of the season. And when you can play at both ends like that, it increases your margin for error. And if I'm talking about margin for error, I'm talking about playoffs, and that makes me happy, as a side note.
Absolutely. Gosh, that 83% BPI number is so interesting to me. And, of course, a big reason Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, the favorite to repeat as NBA MVP. And, of course, we've been talking about this. He is eligible to sign that Supermax contract extension this offseason. Now, Giannis has repeatedly said winning is the most important thing to him. If Milwaukee keeps winning, he will be happy as a Buck. In this bubble restart, Brian, how much should the playoffs impact his decision, or do you think what happens with the salary cap this offseason should be more of a factor? This is like the craziest offseason we're ever going to have.
Boy, doesn't it all depend? I mean, you say to the Bucks, does this playoffs matter? If they win, they hope it matters. They hope he's re-signed. If they lose, they're like, yeah, I hope it doesn't matter. The salary cap is something that hasn't been negotiated yet. I don't know where that's going. My feel is that the cap will probably stay elevated and they'll deal with it another way. So I think he'll still be incentivized. But the Supermax will come down. The referendum on the entire concept of the Supermax will happen with Giannis. If he signs it, the Supermax will have worked beautifully. The Bucks will celebrate. If he doesn't, the Supermax, for some of the other reasons, will be a failure. And I predict it'll be thrown out in the next CBA.
Well, the way I'm looking at it is that I'm listening to Giannis. Giannis is saying, I'm not saying I want to be a Buck full time. He's saying I want to win. So this is putting pressure on the Milwaukee Bucks and the organization that they have to win. They have to at least get to the finals. That means to tell me that Giannis is open to leaving. If they don't win or get pieces around him that could help him win, he's not going to sign that contract. And we all know he's very good friends with a lot of the Golden State Warriors, especially Steph Curry. And we know that they have, huh?
You're just going to fan the flames of that, right? I'm just watching you do it. I'm watching you.
I'm just saying, we all know that they have, you know, that special to go get a star like, you know, Giannis. So you got to watch out for him. And then you got to watch out for a team like the Miami Heat, Pat Riley. He's always aggressive. So Giannis is putting the ball in their court. Giannis is putting a lot of pressure on himself and the Bucks and saying, hey, I want to win. He haven't fully committed to the Bucks, so they have to take this bubble very seriously and go down there and win games and make it to the finals.
And he should be putting that pressure on the Bucks. This is why players have fought for free agency, not only to give players freedom of choice about where they live and work, but also so that they have some say and that there is pressure on teams to create winning teams and rosters around them. Mm-hmm. I disagree with you a little bit about the referendum on the Supermax, Brian. I think that conversation has already happened. The Supermax is basically a bribe that owners offer to try to get players to stay with their teams. And the truth is, it hasn't worked. If a player has wanted to leave, like Anthony Davis, he has left. If a player has wanted to stay, like Russell Westbrook, he has signed it, which just means he's got even more money and then becomes a little bit harder to trade. And we saw everything that happened with the trade of him with the Rockets also as well. So I think the Supermax, we've already found out it doesn't work, but we will see what Anthony Davis does this summer. So, or winter or fall or whenever it is that we have the offseason. Up next, Anthony Davis is feeling fresh, healthy, and confident in the Lakers when the season resumes. How confident? He spoke just an hour or so ago. We will show it to you. Stay tuned. The Lakers are back working out at their practice facility. Now, remember, they're without Avery Bradley, still awaiting a decision from Dwight Howard. However, Anthony Davis, quite confident in his team's chances to win a championship. Take a listen.
I think our chances are the same. I mean, we got guys who's healthy, guys who's ready to go. So I think it's kind of the same. I mean, nothing changes from my standpoint of, you know, our chances are lower. Actually, I think our chances are higher just because we are all rested and we're all ready to go. So if anything, our chances got higher, and it's going to be about just who wants it more. I mean, you know, everybody kind of had a decompression of the season, and obviously, you know, with stuff going on, but it's about what team wants it more and which team can stay healthy.
Perk, you buying what AD is selling?
Rachel, you heard what the 2020 Defensive Player of the Year said. He's ready. He's ready for the action. Listen, we know that Anthony Davis has been dealing with little nicks and bruises, his health force with his shoulder. Now he's had time to recover. He feel well rested. You know, he's a top five player in the league, playing alongside LeBron James, the best duo in the league, the best duo since Kobe and Shaq. And if he's speaking out, because Anthony Davis don't talk often. So if he's speaking out, he got it on his mind, and I buy everything he's saying. I tell you that.
Perk makes compelling cases. When we last left this, I thought the Clippers were the better team, but it was close. The Lakers have lost two rotation players, but I have no idea what's all going to look out. If Kawhi Leonard and Paul George are healthy and at full power, that's going to be a hell of a series, and that's what I want to see. May the best team win.
And, of course, remember, the Bucks feel that they will be waiting on the other end, so they got to contend with that, too. But I like the confidence. I want to hear all of that smack talk coming back. It means basketball is coming back. All right, guys, this just in at the buzzer. Kendrick Perkins, you said earlier in the show you were never dunked on by Vince Carter. But I'm sorry to say that our super producer, Michael Bodmer, who has at his fingertips all of the video you could want, he found it on the YouTube, November 29th, 2006. We haven't been able to get the video into our control room yet, but you guys can all look it up. Vince was 29 years old with the Nets. You, Perk, a youngster, just 22 with the Celtics. Do you remember? Has your memory been jogged, Kendrick Perkins?
Was it like a dunk on, like how Blake Griffin got me, or it was kind of like like a little ah? Because it's a different type of dunk on. I'm saying,
you hear that, Brian?
I wouldn't put on a poster that's
Perk,
like
you were playing defense
throughout the media.
I respect you were playing defense.
What you mean?
Own it. You were playing defense. Big man.
No,
you were a defender.
No, Brian, there's two types of dunks on. Like, I don't consider that, like, the Alonzo Mourning, when he got Alonzo Mourning, that's a dunk on. I don't recall Vince Carter dunking
on me like
that.
You see how nice that house is? That house is that nice because you played defense. Don't apologize for playing defense.
Perk, it was not a, like, Scottie Pippen, Patrick Ewing dunk. Don't worry.